Things are increasingly becoming hard for me and easy for you, because you know I started the semester by just showing up and preaching, and now I had to read like 10 papers, maybe more, and I only barely know. I have a perspective of the field that I'll try to give you. So today we will talk about plan recognition, which is, as I mentioned, I don't know what's the way of talking about it, figuring out other people's plans, okay? And the reason why that's important, of course, is if I know what your plan is, I can try to help you, I can try to stop you, everything. In fact, if you know you are, military is very interested in this, because if you know the plans of the bad guys, then you can try to stop them, okay? The entire security checks are essentially put in place supposedly to guess, based on your behavior, etc., whether or not you're going to blow up a plane. And then if they recognize that you're likely to do it, they'll try to stop you. Okay. Now, we'll see interesting things happen, because when you are observing somebody's plan, you know, there could be noise, in the sense that you actually observed the plan wrongly because there's observational noise, or the agent was actually making a wrong plan, you know, for the right thing. So for example, you know, many a time you have reasonably innocent people getting the third degree treatment in the, you know, at the airport securities, because they looked furtively around while going through the security, okay? They were just executing a wrong plan for normally getting onto the flight, rather than actually executing the right plan for blowing up the plane, okay? But the security guys decided that these guys are actually executing the right plan for blowing up the plane, and so they go give them third degree, okay? Part of the point that we're making here is that when you're recognizing other people's plans, there's an issue of observational noise, and there's also an issue of those people may not know what they're doing. So they actually are doing the wrong plans. And some of the most interesting stories, including this, you know, including getting third degree treatment for doing innocent things at the airplane, at the airport. And also I'll try to send you this one hilarious story that Woody Allen writes about this one guy coming to ask Lincoln. It's a made up story of this one guy coming to ask Abraham Lincoln for a favor, because his son, there's an actual real story that during Civil War, there was this one guy who essentially was going to be executed because he ran away from the army after enlisting, okay? And then, so the father comes to Abraham Lincoln to ask for mercy. I mean, those were the days, by the way, during the Lincoln time, people would just go in to the White House and start talking. And after a while, actually, Lincoln had to say, only between 3 to 6 can you see me, okay, which is still better than my office hours. This guy once comes there, and because he's actually, once he sees Lincoln and his entire cabinet, you know, he basically, instead of asking for, you know, clemency on his, you know, son's death sentence, he instead asks a question such as, how long should a man's legs be? Okay, and then, you know, there's this whole entire story where this is Woody Allen writing this, and Lincoln then comes up with a joke saying, long enough to reach the ground, okay, which is his joke. And then he's very happy, he goes home and he tells his wife as to how funny he was, and then the wife makes him think, you know, Why do you think that guy would come all the way to ask this question? You know, and then he rethinks this whole entire episode and realizes that he must have been, in a sense, executing the wrong plan for the right goal. And so this being a story, he just completely realizes what his real goal was, and then goes back and, you know, does clemency and all that. But the point is that plan recognition, that, you know, especially recognizing intents of other agents, is a big thing that we do every day, and there are layers of it. And what I'll try to do in today's and the next class is to give you an idea of what's the status in the field, okay? And one interesting point is that a lot of people who have no interest in generating plans are still interested in recognizing other people's plans. Okay, because as I said, the applications for recognizing plans essentially can be disjoint from the applications for generating plans. Okay, if I recognize your plans, I could either help you or I could stop you, you know. Anyway, so the levels of recognition, so the question is, when I'm trying to recognize what somebody is doing, okay, there are different levels at which I can recognize. I could have basically lowest level, you know, in this case, let's say in a physical scenario, I would just see the physical movement. And I'll see somebody lifted their hand, somebody moved from one place to another place. Okay, that's like pure sensing. You're essentially going to get very noisy information, and then that's what you're actually trying to figure out. So the question is, did I see this guy run? Did I see this guy raise his hand? Okay, that's the first level. The second level is, you know, in fact, not even run. I mean, so from the kind of movement that you're doing, you could then say, you can recognize and say, well, they must be running. They're trying to hold on to something. Okay. And then once you know the behavior, then you can actually start recognizing plans. They must be grasping this glass and running because they just, that must be because they're trying to get a glass of water. And why are they running to get a glass of water? Must be because they ate really spicy food. Something like this. You're trying to essentially make sense of the world around you. And then, you know, the top level goals, you know, you can have goals in terms of that what's going on right now is quenching. Somebody is trying to quench their thirst. Okay, so you could talk about recognizing, you know, in the ideal scenario, you want to go from here all the way to here. Okay, but a lot of work gets done either by starting just here and going here, or starting here, going here, or starting here, going here. So basically, start in the middle and stop in the middle. Okay, and that could still be useful. Okay, that could still be useful. So now, as I said, so in fact, this is actually a big issue when you read a lot of papers on plan recognition, which many, you know, there are names for this field include plan recognition, goal recognition, intention recognition, activity recognition. Okay, and all of these, you know, supposedly plan recognition is the big name, just like, you know, planning people always like to think that the problem they define is the most general problem, and then scheduling is just a special case of planning. And similarly, plan recognition is the most general problem. Activity recognition is just a special case of plan recognition. Okay. So there is work in each of these, and one way of thinking about what they're doing is from where are they starting and where are they going. Okay. One particular thing, for example, if you want to start at the physical movement, right? You cannot say, I don't need to deal with noise. I don't need to deal with uncertainty. There's just no way because the senses are going to be uncertain. Okay. By the way, this one, I made it sound as if you're talking about you know, normal sensory world, but you could also have inputs from what people are doing at their search engine, what they're typing at the computer, right? So in some sense, the signal is still noisy. You may know the ASCII code of the letter that they just typed, so then you know exactly what letter they have, but they can mistype. And so it's again still, they might be not, you know, they might be typing the word that they type may not be the word that they're looking for example. Okay. And one of the interesting things is you could have this entire hierarchy, you could actually have this in the context of essentially interacting with computer artifacts, where essentially the user has some higher level goals, you know, some higher level search goals, let's say, that they're trying to achieve. And they're asking a series of questions, one after other. And, you know, the recognizer can realize, oh, the reason you must be asking all these questions is because you want to get to this point, and then I'll just go and get you that information. Okay? So it can happen, you know, there are multiple applications, but, you know, essentially, at what level are you taking the input matters, because whether or not you can ignore noise makes a difference there. Okay. One other thing that from the point of view of planning, and we'll actually talk about it a little later again, is you'll see that, you know, until now we more or less assumed goals are nothing special, right? Goals are just part of the state variables. So all states are described in terms of state variables. and you just give a goal configuration, which is some, you know, I want these state variables to have these values. Okay. Now, one of the problems with that is that if you have n Boolean state variables, then you essentially can have, you know, 2 power n states, or you can have 3 power n goal states, assuming that you don't care about something. Okay. Now, that's too many goals that you might be trying to achieve. And basically, remember that when I'm trying to recognize what you're trying to do, if I know beforehand that you may only be doing one of 10 things, it becomes easier as to which of those 10 things you are likely to be doing. In particular, I can start cutting down, okay, you can't be doing this, you can't be doing this, you can't be doing this, so it must be these, one of these two. Do you understand what I'm saying? So, although goals, we haven't actually made any differentiation in normal planning until now, okay? In plan recognition community, people actually do talk about goals being a separate entity. Okay, and they actually hope that the number of goals is much fewer than the potential subsets of state variable values. Okay, and one idea, one way of doing this is to potentially say that there are certain state variables that are considered. I mean, you can, you know, if you want to think about it in our model, you could either say that there are certain state variables that actually are the only ones you would be interested in terms of their values. Or you could also say that goals correspond to some higher level state variables that are dependent on the lower level ones. Okay. In fact, this whole notion of hierarchy here, as well as this point that goals can be thought of as higher level, brings in this point that oftentimes plan recognition is well tied to hierarchical planning part that we have talked about here. You will see, the first thing you'll see today would be a hierarchical plan-based plan recognition. Because it turns out that it becomes easier. Because in hierarchical planning, in general, you'll assume that the top level, there are only few things that people might be interested in doing, and those correspond to the top level of the schema hierarchy. Okay? Anyway, so having said that, let me change my path completely and talk about a very different problem, just so that you can think of this also as a plan recognition problem, so that you can actually see a large spectrum. And also it actually makes you think of some things that you may not think of, especially in the plan recognition community, people didn't think about right away. Okay, this is essentially a very simple problem that you all already deal with, right? Which is, you try to mistype something, Google or any other machine, I mean any other of these programs tell you, you meant this maybe. Right, so they are correcting the spelling of the word that you type. Okay, in the old days, remember, the easiest thing to do is to tell you that you're wrong. That's easy. Anybody can say that, because all you need to do is take the word that you typed, hash it into the dictionary. If there is no such word in the dictionary, then you must have typed it wrong. Plus some other things. For example, dictionary doesn't have all the, they only have the canonical forms of the word, so you need to check whether or not you have put the ED correctly, IED correctly, etc. Okay. But the bigger issue when you're doing spelling correction, of course, is you may have essentially typed a word that's not exactly the word that you meant to type. Okay. And so obviously there are multiple mistakes you could have made, you know, and the question is, what should be the further spelling recognized, you know, spelling character to be a good spelling character, it should show you the most likely word. Okay. In particular, you notice that, so what you have in a spelling recognizes spelling correction software is, you know, you have a dictionary of words and you essentially have a partial or complete typing of a word. Complete typing is normally the norm, where you just check the spelling of the entire word. Partial typing, if you can support that, that's essentially where, as you start typing, the program is guessing what is the word you're trying to complete. And word completion is very much like plan recognition, because if I know, like, you know, remember the, how to tell you this. So there is this, So basically, when we see people starting to execute certain plans, you will realize their you recognize their plan and then try to help them, stop them, etc. Right? I mean, so in a way, you're completing their plan in your own mind and then deciding what to do with it. So there's this joke that I've heard, and I should tell you this, where this woman was going in the bus, and there's this old man who was basically, you know, taking the seat there, and the woman was standing, and the old man is trying to get up. Okay, so the woman says, no, you don't need to set up, you know, I am young man, woman, I can stand, you should sit, you're old, and then makes him sit down. So then a little bit later, he again tries to stand up, she again, you know, makes him sit down, and this happens after the 18th stop or something. This man says, if you let me get up now, at least I can get down and reach my home by the evening, because I have to go all the way back now, because my stop is gone multiple stops back. So in this particular case, this woman essentially was recognizing this man's plan just from the prefix, except it was a wrong recognition. She assumed that the reason he was getting up, his higher level goal was not to just get off the bus, but to give her the seat. And then so she kept stopping him because, you know, in this particular case, she didn't think that she should be given that, okay? But anyway, in this particular case, what that woman did there, you know, joke aside, is what a word completion software is trying to do. And just as that old man was, you know, justifiably irritated because now after 18 stops, he still hasn't gotten to get down, you know, you too can be irritated when you try to type S-U-P. And then right away the program says, oh, you mean supercalifragilistic? Right? In the sense that it's like a completion, but totally wrong completion. Yes?
So I have a question on all this. We kind of assume we have a certain knowledge base about the domain, right? What are the assumptions on this knowledge base?
That's all we're going to talk about. There are millions of different variations. Okay. So let's look at this particular problem, and then we'll talk about, you know, in the set of slides that I'm going to, I'll talk about the dimensions. And what you assume matters, you know, obviously, okay? So, in a way, in fact, it is a very important question. I mean, you cannot recognize other people's plans unless you have knowledge, okay? Because you have to have, for example, at the minimum, one might think that plan recognition, if somebody is doing an action, you think you know the normal effects of those actions. Because otherwise you have no idea what, you know, what would come after this. Okay. Anyway, so the minimal requirement for spelling correction is given a dictionary of words and a partial or complete typing of a word, complete or correct the word. Correct the word is the easier part, complete is harder part. Now, complete is harder assuming you're also making mistakes while typing. Because then you don't know exactly what you're supposed to be completing. And this is essentially what those of you who have iPhones and iPod touches know. That's exactly what iPod touch and iPhone are trying to do. As you're typing, they try to give you the word. And, you know, many of the people already, you know, the other day I was in a meeting and a bunch of people with iPhones and I had an iPod touch and they were asking me, so how exactly do you disable this guy when they come up with the word suggestion that, you know, they want to put in? Because the way this program is put, you know, the way Apple advertises it is, don't look, you just keep typing and it'll all work out fine. Except it just doesn't like, you know, bunches of things, you know, and so it obviously, any plan recognizer is going to be, could be faulty, okay? And the way in this particular case in iPod Touch, what happens is it comes up with the suggestion word, and it doesn't allow, you don't have to say anything specific to say, yes, that's what I want. If you don't say anything, it just changes your word into what it wants. Okay? And if you want it to stop that suggestion, there's a little cross, and then I have a big finger, and I have to go hit that cross so that that word would go away. Okay? So this is sort of, anytime plan recognizers recognize wrongly, people get mad. The other annoying plan recognizer that you are all very familiar with, some years back, was the Microsoft Paperclip assistant, right? He too was recognizing your plans. In fact, that was basically one of the earliest applications of probabilistic plan recognition. Okay, But, you know, whether or not it's successful is, you know, remains to be seen. Eric Horvitz became a very big man in Microsoft, you know, because of that work. Okay. Anyway, now what's interesting is that if you have just this information, it's not enough to actually correct the spelling. Okay. Because you need to also know, for example, normally this is, by the way, the standard way spelling correction is done. For those of you who haven't thought about it before. And if you want a nice little discussion, look at that Navig's page. So you are essentially trying to figure out the word C, the correct word C, given the typed word W. And for each possible word, you want to compute this probability, and whichever has the highest probability, that is the word that you want to output as the correct word. Okay, that's the usual idea. Now, of course, then you'd use the Bayes rule and write this in the CW in terms of W given C, okay? Because W is the typed word, C is the correct word, okay? And this is, so then this one, this probability is saying, if you were trying to type the words, the correct word, what's the probability that you would type this wrong word? Okay, now that is actually based on the error model. In fact, people make certain kinds of errors more likely than others. Right, for example, you know, there is this, so in fact, to talk about that, they basically talk about edit distances between words. You know, how many typing mistakes, how many individual typing mistakes you have to make to go from the correct word to the wrong word, or vice versa. Starting from the wrong word, how many individual typing mistakes you have to make so that you can get to the correct word. And the assumption is that the smaller distances are more likely, and the larger distances are less likely. That's only an assumption. In fact, sometimes, you know, you would get totally gobbledygook because you put your hand kind of wrongly aligned, those of you who touch type. And then you type, and then the whole thing is ZPQWMKNY, and then you essentially have no connection to, it's like Rot 13, which is rotating the words by 13 kind of a thing. And so obviously those are also very likely errors. But, you know, so you essentially need to have a probability model of what are the likely errors you can make, okay? And then you also need to know what's the likelihood that in the normal language, the user is likely to type the word C to begin with. This is where you would think twice about giving supercalifragilistic as a suggestion, you know, when, you know, as a completion for like a small word like super, wrongly spelled. Okay? The issue, of course, is because that's not very likely. It's the prior probability that that word would be used at all is quite low. Now, here's my question. Where do you get this? This has to be got, essentially, from a corpus. A corpus, not a dictionary, but a corpus of actual English or actual Hindi written by actual people that are representative of the population whose spelling errors you're trying to correct. Do you understand what I'm saying? So in certain places, certain people use some words more often than in other places. Okay, and so it's really, this is not dictionary, of course, because in dictionary, each word is appearing exactly once, unless it's a bad dictionary. Okay, and this is also not all potential grammatically correct sentences that were somehow automatically generated. Because that won't have the right, that will not have the right property. Because if you automatically generate it, then you are not taking into account the fact that certain words are much more used in English than other words. And that certain words are much more commonly used in Britain than in US. Like everybody knows the is a very common word. But there are also certain words like lorry, which are just not used here, but they're used in India and in Britain. Okay? So you need to look at the corpus of the actual usage. This is important. So we'll talk about analogies to planning in a minute, but yes.
Messenger, yeah, you do Mm-hmm. For work drafting. But when you're doing things like technical writing or even school page writing, you generally you take out all the school skills.
Mm-hmm.
And you still have the work from English, which is vocabulary level. You're like, this is a sixth grade student's vocabulary level.
No, this is, I'm talking about a much simpler issue. In fact, all I'm saying is correcting your current word. That's it. Okay,
yeah.
So if you...
And you could have a running tally of the average vocabulary level of a person and analyze how likely it would be based on...
That's a good point. Okay, in fact, the issue is really the PC and PW given C are best made, really, for you, because you have an annoying tendency to make certain errors more often than the rest of us. And you have an annoying tendency to use certain particular words more often than the rest of us. But none of the spelling correction software does it upfront, unless it's also learning, you know, while you are actually correcting. Okay? So it's a question of where you get these parameters from. You're learning them, and it's much easier to learn one set of parameters for a large population than for individuals. But you can, you know, obviously start with those default, and if it's a big deal for you, you can actually learn, you know, update those parameters over a period of time. But the important thing is these numbers are not, so now let's talk about connection to plan recognition. Okay, what has word correction got to do with plan recognition? Okay, in a way, what I meant to say was the correct word, and what I typed was the wrong word. In fact, if you want a very silly analogy, think of individual letters in the word as actions, and it's a sequence of letters which is a plan now. Okay, I'm not saying this is the best analogy, but the point is that you are going to be seeing actions of people, and then you're trying to guess what is the total set of actions that they're trying to do and what their overall goal is. Okay, so in fact, one interesting thing is when people are doing actions, you need to know where is the logical end to the sequence of actions that they're trying to do. Right? In the spelling correction, there is a dictionary. Ultimately, all correct words are in the dictionary. So in a way, the goals for the spelling corrector are in the dictionary. Okay? In the case of plan recognition, you need a library of plans. Okay, so you actually, and you could have smaller set of them, larger set of them, but without them, you don't know exactly what sequence of actions is a valid plan. In fact, every sequence of feasible actions is a plan. Do you understand what I'm saying? It's like basically, if you're talking about correcting strings of letters in English, that makes no sense. That makes no sense, because strings of letters, all strings of letters are fine. But dictionary only contains those strings of letters that are considered valid English words. Okay? And so the question is, if you're trying to make this analogy with plan recognition, you need to set up a library of plans which are sort of corresponding to the feasible plans that people do, the likely plans that people do. Okay? And the plans essentially also, each of these plans presumably are indexed under some goal that they're actually trying to achieve. So if you're just recognizing the plan, in essence, you're also recognizing the goal that it's indexed under. Now, errors in the words are doing wrong actions. Okay, so you were supposed to go through the security, you know, straight without looking around, without looking furtively, and you made a mistake, and you did this extra funny thing. And so you kind of introduced errors. Okay, that makes it harder. With errors, the spelling correction is harder, obviously, and completion is harder too. Okay, and then the language model, as I pointed out already by now, it corresponds to the plan corpus. Now, the interesting thing is library of plans is like the dictionary. Corpus, on the other hand, has to provide likelihood information. Which plans are more likely? Which are less likely? It's not enough to say these are all the plans people might be doing. Okay, it's also a question of which of them are more likely to be done. Okay, and so the connection, so the library, so this is, think of this as dictionary, which everybody has. In all the plan recognition approaches we look at, everybody has a library of plans of some sort. But most of them, for the longest time, would not see the obvious point, which is that you need to consider which plants are more likely and which are less likely. Now, I talked about likelihood. Here's a question. If the world that the agent is working in is deterministic, okay, so I'm recognizing the plants of an agent who is working in a deterministic world. Do I still need probabilities? Yes, because all deterministic means is that you know what will happen when you do this action. Okay, but there are some plants that you are more likely to do and some plants you are less likely to do. Okay, this is just, you know, trying to put some sanity check. If probabilistic handling uncertainty is important for planning, it's even more important for plan recognition, because even if in fact the underlying dynamics of the agent's world is deterministic, you still need to know what is more likely versus less likely. Okay? Okay, so after that reasonably long introduction, I'm going to go through a set of slides that Henry Couch has on plan recognition, with some comments of mine introduced in between. So basically what we're going to do first is talk about dimensions of the plan or behavior recognition problem. Okay. In fact, I should have had a slide called synonyms for plan recognition, which I already told you. Behavior recognition, activity recognition, intent recognition, goal recognition, plan recognition, all of them. Okay. So that in the plan recognition community, surprisingly enough, in fact, the word plan recognition, the phrase plan recognition, was only invented in 1978. Until then, I don't know what people were calling it. But essentially, it was invented in the context of natural language understanding, where the idea is that if I know what you're trying to get to, I can make more sense of what you're saying. Oftentimes, because the predictive power that gives me as to what your overall goal is helps me figure out why I am saying certain words, and even if you miss a couple of them, you can actually, you know, correctly predict what you miss. Okay, so that's where it actually came from. And then the dimensions of plan recognition, one important thing that people talk about is keyhole, where you're just viewing the agent without actually interacting with the agent. When I say you in this entire lecture, you the plan recognizer, not you the planner. Okay, somebody else is doing the planning and execution of the plans. Okay, and so you the plan recognizer is just looking through a keyhole and seeing the actions and trying to figure out what are the plans that you're actually executing. Okay, and when I say I recognize your plan, that means I recognize your goal. Okay, here is the thing. When I say plan recognition, please understand that under certain conditions, you know, we'll see that in fact if the input is the action name. Okay, so in fact one of the issues is when I look through the keyhole, what exactly am I looking at? Am I looking at the effects of the agent's actions on the world, which is state information, or am I looking at the actions that the agent is doing? Looking basically means somehow they're telling me, now A1 is done, now A7 is done, now A9 is done. You understand what I'm saying? If I do that, if I actually give you the action names, obviously it's an easier problem in some sense, because you know those actions. Not in normal conditions, you assume that the actions that they are doing, you have the model of those actions with you too. You know, in the simplest case, you assume both of us have the same exact model of those actions. Okay. Now, in such a case, you know, if I just told you, okay, if I just told you that the planner, the agent did A1, A7, A9, you know, saying that, yes, I recognize you did A1, A7, A9 is useless, right? Because that's exactly what I told you. What you are essentially trying to say is A1, A7, A9, which means you are trying to, first you try to figure out what is the goal this A1, A7, and A9 are trying to support. Okay, and depending on whether you wait until all the actions are done or whether you did it even before all the actions are done, you are predicting the goals, you know, so online prediction versus offline prediction. Okay, So in the keyhole, you are essentially not talking to the agent doing the plans. In the interactive scenarios, the agent is talking to you. And so the recognizer and the executor have an interaction. And that's the normal way. I give you clues as to what I'm going to say next. You know, in general, when you give a talk, you have to kind of tell them, now I'm going to get into this part, to make what easy, not the content easy, but your understanding, your recognition of the content easy. Okay? So interactive recognition, basically, you would do some signaling actions apart from normal actions. Okay? And you also, the actions can be speech acts themselves. You are saying, so now I'm going to pour this thing into this, I mean, this liquid into this glass. Okay, you say that and then you do it. Okay, so that sort of provides extra information. Clearly it's an easier recognition problem once you have that. The complexity of recognition becomes easier. But the problem, modeling it, is more painful now, because now you have to consider all these speech acts and so on. Okay, mostly we won't do it. The other issue, of course, is ideal versus fallible agents. We already talked about this. Do you expect that the agent is ideal? That means they know exactly what they're trying to achieve, and they know exactly what their actions are going to achieve, what effects their actions are going to have once they do them. Okay, if they made wrong plans, if they misunderstood their actions, if they also misunderstood their own goals, or if they have wrong beliefs about the world, then they will do plans which makes no sense to you. But you could easily figure out what went wrong if you could consider, you know, also those errors. So for example, so if this guy is going to drive him to Reagan Airport, and his flight actually leaves from Dallas, clearly it's a completely silly plan to take his flight because he's going to be in the wrong airport. But so every action, you know, in fact 5 or 6 actions in that plan would be wrong. Okay. But really there's only one high level mistake they made, which is they had the wrong belief that the flight is actually going to be leaving from the wrong airport. And then, you know, there are other kinds of things. You know, there are multiple reasons why errors can happen. This is your error model for general plan recognition. And in the typing, the error model is that you tend to swap, you know, close by words, you tend to kind of have the shift kind of errors, where you put your hand in the wrong place and then start thinking that is ASDF. Okay? And then, you know, I like this too. I mean, sometimes there could be actions which have no, they serve no purpose whatsoever. But they have no effect on the world in any sense, but people do it just because they want to do it. You know, so like just yelling at the person in front of you as if somehow that will change the traffic pattern. Okay, then this is a big thing, we talked about it, reliable versus unreliable observations. Notice that in the word correction problem, I'll keep going back to the word correction problem, that's one specific one, in the word spelling correction problem, observation was reliable or unreliable? It was reliable. It was that the agent was making mistakes, but the observation was reliable. But you could also have the situation where your observation is unreliable. The agent was making the right things. Okay, so that's more likely to happen, for example, in the behavior recognition kinds of scenarios where you are trying to see whether somebody raised their hand. Yes, sir. What? OCR, exactly. So if you, for example, started from handwritten characters instead of typed characters, okay. Well, no, PDF it doesn't. Well, normal PDF it doesn't. You know, the scanned PDF document, that's just OCR, because scanning doesn't do anything.
But like, even if it's typed, printed, and
scanned. Yes, it can make errors. Yes, it can make errors. So in fact, you can reduce the observational noise to some extent by, for example, saying that people should enter, like for example, if you want to see the movie 4, I mean, this movie enter 4, on the phone. And that is basically reducing the, if I say the word of the movie, the voice recognition system might actually fail. Right? Because that it now has to look at the sound and figure out what I said. How many of you have seen that Seinfeld one where Kramer decides to become the movie line. And the funny thing, of course, is for us, so he suddenly starts getting wrong calls from people because his phone number got changed, and so people think that his number is the movie line number. So they call this and they try to find out where what movies are playing. So after a while, Kramer decides to play with them, and he actually becomes the movie line. And so he starts asking them questions like, if you, you know, here are the movies, if you want this movie, you know, tell me which movie you want to go to, press that number. And so they press 4, but for him, it hears, it comes out a keek, and he doesn't know what keek means. So he says, why didn't you say the name? You know, because it's exactly the opposite for us, because we have a harder time figuring out what does keeks mean, and it, we have no problem figuring out what people say. Okay, but anyway, so the keek thing was made for the computers because that reduces the noisy interpretation, right? It basically, the signal frequency is essentially telling them what number you clicked. Anyway, the reason we got there is the observations can actually be unreliable also, in which case you are not sure what actually you saw. Okay, and then open versus closed doors is a very big deal. Do you even know all the goals that people could have? The reality is, if there are n state variables in your world, there really are 3 power n possible goal states. Yes? Yeah, I know. Yes, you're right. That's true. They're disjunctive goals, but I still like 3 power n because I'm just giving goals as conjunctive goals. But you're right. Anyway, there are too many goal states in the open world. Okay, and if you don't even know all the state variables, God help you. It's truly unknown number. Okay, so the point, of course, is that everybody assumes fixed plan library. They try to assume fixed plan library. Okay, there are some which actually don't assume fixed plan library and try to say what are the possible plan. I mean, actually, no. In fact, pretty much everybody assumes fixed plan library, because otherwise what happens is anything you do is a reasonable thing to do, as long as it's feasible. Do you understand what I'm saying? Because the big difference between English and plan recognition is English has a dictionary. And I mean, you never thought that I would say that. Dictionary is so big, you know, but plans are even bigger. The number of plans you can do is even more. And so somebody has to give you a dictionary of plans that can be done as far as recognition is concerned. Yes. That's one more dimension. We'll get to that too. Interleaving makes a big difference. Okay, and in each of these things makes the problem harder. Okay, but it's like, in fact, there is only one or two methods out there which even consider the potential that, you know, the agent might be doing multiple goals at the same time. And so while, you know, yes, that's very much a possibility. So, and then again, metric versus non-metric time, you know, you do basically, just having the time into information makes you come up with certain explanations as against another explanation. By the way, recognition problem is an explanation problem. You're trying to explain why people did this, right? So if John enters restaurants and leaves, that's what you would say in an instantaneous planning model, a timeless planning model, okay? But if you have time, then you say John enters restaurant and leaves 1 hour later versus John enters restaurant and leaves after 5 minutes. These are completely different, you know, you have very completely different explanations as to why John did that, right? Let's see. Okay, this is basically your point. I was looking for the single versus multiple ongoing plans. That's exactly the point, you know, which is, can you have interleaved plans? In which case, you need to consider both of them. You have to recognize all of them at the same time, okay? Now, dimensions of, one more thing is, what is the outcome desired from the plan recognition problem? Okay, plan recognizer, okay? One simple thing is, set of consistent plans or goals, okay? That means, given what I have seen, I think you could, whatever I have seen is consistent with you having the following goals. That's all basically I'm going to say. Okay? The more interesting one would be most likely plan or goal, because unless you're lucky, you would have enough goals in the plan library that the number of actions you do it may still be consistent with too many potential goals and potential plans. Okay, so then you would need to consider which of them is most likely. And when you talk about, to talk about consistent plans or goals, you don't need the language model. You know, if you again use the word analogy, the spelling correction analogy, if you're only considering all possible words you could have been trying to type, instead of, you know, when you wound up typing this, and if I say that there's only a fixed number of errors that you can do, then there'll only be a fixed number of correct words you could have been potentially trying to type. And then, in fact, some of them can't even be words because they're not in the dictionary. Okay, but what's very important is that would be a useless spelling corrector. And what you need is likelihood, which of them are most likely. Okay, and then also the most like, the other issue is it also could depend upon what plan you're going to recognize might also depend upon what is the overall interest in recognizing the plan. If you are interested in recognizing the plan to help them versus stop them from doing the plan, then you may be interested in, for example, you know, if there are two possible plans, you know, of close to equal likelihood that you might be following, one of them has a really bad utility for me and the other one I don't care, you know, I'm going to actually take the action corresponding to the one that has the bad utility because, you know, I don't want to take a chance at that point. Okay, so that's sort of the difference between critical versus most likely. Okay, and also the interventions that you want to do, you may want to support the agent in completing the plan, or you may want to stop the agent from completing the plan. Okay, the usually in the classic applications of plan recognition are user interfaces. For example, when you, as you start asking questions, then the interface tries to figure out what it is that you're trying to do and tries to complete. Okay, and that's exactly, by the way, what the paperclip guy tried to do. So the idea was that if you, in fact, you'll see that the kind of things that they base their model on are events such as the guy is looking at multiple menus one after other. Okay, that basically means they are kind of lost. Okay, they use this kind of evidence to figure out whether or not you're lost, and then based on and depending on the specific kinds of menus you're looking for, it would try to guess what your problem might be. You know, if you like paperclip guy, then you know that their guess is good. If not, you know that their guess is kind of too broad. Okay. Again, the other thing, of course, is depending on the papers you look at, there are plan recognition papers where they assume that all the actions have been done, and then I just give you all the goals and plans consistent with them. Okay, by the way, here's an interesting thing. If, in fact, one interesting point that you know, if I actually complete all the actions, A1, A7, A9, A12, that's my actions, right? What do I mean by giving the plan that is consistent with this? You know, there is something interesting about what is the goal, because ultimately, after you do A1, A7, A9, A12, you get a state. Now, that state has lots of things going there. Now, which one of those state variables having those values are you interested in? That's goal recognition. Okay, but it looks as if at this level, it looks as if plan recognition is like nonsensical, because all you're going to say is A1, A7, A9, A12 is your plan, because you just told me those are the actions you did. Okay, now, one of the interesting things is, think of any planning formalism where just telling you the actions that the agent did doesn't tell you everything about the plan that we talked about here.
Contingent planning.
No. Well, not really. Well, that's possible, but think even easier. What? Yeah, no, I'm not talking about the goals. I'm not talking about the goals. In fact, you gave the answer, but in the wrong part, as far as I'm concerned. Goals, see, the thing is, even if I tell you all the actions I did, you still don't know which is my goal. So, you know, there are multiple things that I could be potentially trying to. So, for example, here after this, I know, let's say, A is true, B is false, C is true, D is false, M is true, J is true. Okay, that's my state right now. Now, what is my goal? Okay, the assumption is that you'll see that most of the plan recognizers have, as I said, goal schema, where they say people can only have certain types of goals. Okay, and there may be, the goal schema can essentially be, people might be interested in the AC-ness. That's a goal called AC-ness. And it holds if A or C is true. Or rather, it's, you know, AC-ness, no, maybe actually in fact A and C is true. Because otherwise it's next one. A and C is true. In that case, what I'll do is I have a bunch of these goal schemas with me, and then I will see which of those goal schemas actually are true in the final state. And those could be the goals that you're trying to achieve. Okay? So as far as goal recognition, there is still a problem. But I mean, in the sense, there is a problem that you, that is non-trivial to solve after getting the action. Right? But what is there about the plan? Is there anything left about the plan? What?
Well, correction. I mean, when you try well, but it's incorrect. So you have to recognize the correct word, I mean, the plan.
Yeah, no, I think, let me get to actually what I was looking for, and then we'll hopefully get the other ones too. In general, if I only tell you the primitive actions, I don't tell you the entire HTN plan. That was the place where you looked at it. In fact, in an HTN planning, the outcome, normal, you know, HTN plan outcome is the task schemas that were actually picked, and their reductions all the way until the final level. And what you see the agent doing is this low-level action. And so there are some schemas. Recognizing the plan in that context means recognizing all these schemas. And in fact, if you do that, in essence, you could say that the names of the HTN schemas are the goals themselves. Names of the HTN schemas are the goals themselves. Okay. So there are actually two types of plan recognition approaches. Let me first show you this, and then I'll complete that sentence. If you look at the universe of approaches for plan recognition problem, then there is one set which essentially says, give you all the plans that are consistent, all the plans and goals that are consistent with the actions you have done. Okay? And the other basically looks for the most likely such plan or goal. Okay? Now clearly you need both of them, really. In fact, you know, in most scenarios you need the most likely outcome. Okay? But I must tell you the following thing. Sometimes as to how important is picking the most likely plan depends on the application. Okay? So here is the deal. I mean, in fact, I made this in a proposal, so I should tell you this and see if you'll buy it, because, you know, the ONR guys are going to decide whether they'll buy it or not. So the idea is, if one of the reasons you might be recognizing, if you're a computer interface, one of the reasons you might be recognizing people's plans on people's high-level goals and plans is based on that, you could then make the rest of their plan execution go faster. In the context of, let's say, something like, you know, like an interface to online data sources, like some sort of a search engine or something, what that would mean, trying to make the rest of their life easier, might sometimes involve just prefetching the information on which their next query is going to be based on. Okay, so in that case, as long as I don't come and tell you this is what you are looking for, if I think you might be looking for, you know, I'm not quite sure, but you could be looking for this one of these top 10 things. Now, top 10 is still too many, but if all I'm doing is prefetching information to make all those 10 plans go faster for you, okay, you couldn't care less. and you are happy. You know, in fact, if you are one of those 10 plants, you would in fact be faster. Okay, if you're not, then there was no difference. As long as, of course, you know, the interface doesn't freeze while it's trying to prefetch the information for all possible plants. Okay, so the point I was trying to make is consistency-based plant approaches. It's easy to actually just yell at them and say that's a dumb idea. Okay, because there are too many goals and plans that are likely to be consistent with what I have seen. But you could think of them, in fact, as a first pre-processing step, and then after those, you look for the ones that are most likely, sometimes. That's only sometimes, because the problem is if, in fact, people can be making errors in their plans, then consistency-based approach would have killed those plans, because they're not consistent. I mean, it could have killed the right plan because it's not consistent with what was observed. Okay, but you know, assuming no errors, then you can take the consistent plans and then look for the most likely ones in them. Okay, and the second issue, of course, is sometimes all you need is the consistent plans, because then you can try to make all of them go faster. Or if you are an intrusion detection agent, which is the opposite. Okay, so you actually see, I mean, this has actually been done again in the context of plant recognition. So you see some outside agent trying to do various network actions on your computer. This could be consistent with 15 different possible ways in which they're trying to attack the computer, and another 200 ways in which they're just going to do some benign thing. Okay, do I care which of the 15 attacks are the most likely attack? All I need is just quickly make all those 15 fail. Then I'm safe. Do you understand what I'm saying? So it depends on, you know, the place where most likely recognition matters is exactly when, in fact, just based on that piece of information, you would, you know, start interrupting the user, for example. But then in the intrusion detection, interruption is what you are supposed to do. Interrupt all possible things that they might be interested in doing, if they can be potentially bad for you. Okay. So what I'll do in today's class is give you an idea of the consistency-based approaches, and then I'll make you read maybe at least one or two papers for the next class, and then we'll look at, you know, most likelihood-based or probabilistic approaches, which are obviously much more interesting. Now, having said that, I will still get to that in a minute. Okay. The first approaches obviously were all consistency based, because nobody touched probabilities for a while in AI, you know, for the longest time actually. This was actually the original guy who gave the name Schmidt, Charles Schmidt, I think, who gave the name plant recognition. And what they were doing was essentially like the most obvious thing, which is, you know, based on the objects that are being mentioned, you know, guess a plan and see if that plan is correct. And if it's not correct, then guess another plan and see if that plan is correct. Okay? But you name a field, you get to do silly things. Okay? Those of you, by the way, all of you should, I mean, I'll try to see if I can send it to you. You should look at the original STRIPS paper, STRIPS planning paper. Okay? It's just great, because it's about 10 pages of technical material and 40 or 37 pages of code in a journal paper. Those were the days where you get to show your code in Artificial Intelligence Journal, which is the top journal in the field. Okay, so it depends. I mean, you know, it's like 100 years from now, they're all going to laugh at anything that you're going to do and say the same way. Anyway, so that's the first approach. The second one, the guy who really made the maximum mileage on the plan recognition problem, the Google of plan recognition, is Couch. I say Google because Google wasn't the first search engine. It's the first good search engine based on what, you know, you decide. Okay. So the Couch, what Couch did basically is to say something, that is obvious to you now, having taken this class, but it will only become obvious partly because of his work, which is, if you have hierarchical task network schema, okay, and you are seeing the actions, you're trying to find basically all possible parses for these actions and find the minimum number of higher level goals that will explain all the actions you have done. which is essentially like finding the parse of in terms of the HTML. Okay, so I can try to explain what he did in this case, which is infers the minimum set of independent plans that entail the observations. This sort of kind of connects to what, you know, it might look as if it connects to what you said, which is multiple plans are being done. But really what he's saying is, in those days when this 1986 work was done, each HTN schema, the root of it is called a goal. And then another HTN schema has even higher level goal. Okay, so what you really have in this mess of a picture is essentially both, it's like, it's exactly HTN. You have abstraction hierarchy as well as decomposition hierarchy. Okay, and in those days, basically, what he wound up doing is to connect it to minimal set covering, which is what you would do if you're thinking in terms of consistency, right? You are trying to look at minimal set cover that accounts for all the actions that you have actually observed. And you assume there is no error in the action observation, so all actions you observed are there. Okay? And, you know, and then so he assumes infallible agents, he assumes complete plan library in terms of HTN schema. In fact, I would think this is considered one of the sort of the first important works in plan recognition. But as far as you're concerned, this is what you should think of when you think of Couch's approach, which is basically, we talked about this, which is one way of doing HTN planning is to do it bottom up. So you let the search engine do lower level forward search or backward search or whatever. It's coming up with the primitive actions. And all the HTN part of the program is doing is to see whether or not the current partial plan you have on hand has a potential parse in terms of the HTN. When the set of parses becomes zero, you say, kill this group, kill this branch. We talked about this. Remember, there was the up, top down, bottom up approaches for HTN, and this is the bottom up approach. Now, for you, obviously, this idea subsumes this idea. Because if you know how to parse using HTN schemas, then all you're trying to find is all possible parses for a completed plan. In fact, what we were doing here was the parser was recognizing the searcher's behavior. Okay, and telling, and the only thing that it was telling is whether or not at least there is a single parse, in which case that means you are wrong. And in fact, when you ended the plan, the, all the possible parses that are left are actually the possible HTN parses of your plan. And those are all the possible top level goals you might be doing. However, of course, in this system, top level goals are known already. Okay, so if the HTN parser part of it is thought to be outside of the system, then you're doing plan recognition. You had a quick point. But? Underlying primitive planner, yeah. I'll change that, but underlying primitive action planner, not primitive planner, I hate the word, in fact. Yeah, primitive action planner. There's nothing primitive about not having hierarchy, okay? So, now the interesting thing, of course, is that you still don't have likelihood. Since we are talking about that particular point, let's talk a little bit more about that, which is, if I have multiple parses, then they're all equally likely. Which is essentially what, you know, Couch's work did too. Okay, and the other interesting thing is, so Couch basically talks about there being a plan library. What he means by that is that I have these task reduction schemas lying about. But you still don't know which task reduction schemas are more likely to be actually used by the agents making their plans. Okay, so the corpus information is not there. In fact, there's this whole issue in the HTNs. We came to HTNs from a very different direction. We came to it to reduce the search. Okay, but HDNs can also be thought of as abstractions of, you know, patterns in what people do. Now, when you see patterns in what people do, the question of the other question is, how frequent are these patterns? How frequent are these patterns? Okay, so if you are learning these HDNs from actually what people are doing, then you would also have to figure out how frequent are some of these schemas. Okay, and then you have to talk about probabilistic parsing, not just a parse, but the weight of the parse. So each parsing rule essentially will have a weight, and you're trying to look for the minimal weight tree or the maximal weight tree, depending on what the weight means. Okay. Of the parts of the sentence. For me, sentence, and I'm using the word parsing here, HDNs are the grammar, plans are the sentence, the primitive action plans are the sentences. And you're trying to find not just all parses, which is what consistency will tell you, but also the most likely parses. Okay. Now, in the context of couch, if he just finds a parse, then for that parse, whatever is at the top of that hierarchy is the top level goal that plan is supposed to be doing. Notice that nicely gets us out of this mess of, if I did these actions and I got into a huge big state which has, you know, 1,000 state variables in different values, exactly which of these are the goals I was trying to do? I mean, the agent was trying to reach. Well, this is the goal. Okay? Now, having said this, let me show you. So, okay, first of all, look at the chronology. This was 1991. You know, Couch was done, his thesis in 1986, but for some reason, this says 1991, but 86, 91 time frame. Okay? This is 94. Actually, I'm pretty sure 91 is wrong. you know, it's 86 something, and this is 94. Okay, so even though in this class you heard about this first and you heard about this later, chronologically this came much later. Okay, but as far as I know, nobody makes that, you know, obvious connection, which is that HDN planning involves, and the bottom of HDN planning involves recognizing what the searcher is doing underneath. Now, since we talked about HDN planning, we should talk about graph plan. You know, if you're talking about, and so this guy is a 2000 paper, okay, and it appeared in both the AAAI and JAIL, which is like the top journal. And I'll explain it to you in just one slide. So if nothing else, if you sort of think that I explained it to you in that one slide, then you learned something from that course which made this paper essentially a term paper, okay, because you'll see why. Okay, so this paper actually has completely wrong metaphors. The metaphors that they use is to say that planning graphs have been useful in planning, and so they should also be useful in plan recognition. And lo and behold, if you look at this, doesn't this look like a planning graph? Looks very much like a planning graph. Okay, now, but reality, what they're doing is, if you think of planning graphs, the uncertainty in the planning graph is what actions are being done at what level. Right? That's the disjunction. Okay. Now, in the plan recognition problem, you know the actions. These, by the way, are the actions. The top ones are the actions, and then I'll tell you what these are, and these are the state variables. Okay? Right? And so, but you know, first this action was done, then this was done, then this was done. And you know the action model. There is no planning graph. You have an entire plan and you know the state 1, state 2, state 3, state 4. So, in fact, this paper essentially talks about non-hierarchical planning. Plan recognition in non-hierarchical planning is a oxymoron. Right? Because after you're done A7, A9, A12, and I ask you what is the plan I did, you say A1, A7, A9, A12. Okay? And yet it's a JAIR paper. Why? Because again, the important point is, you know, this is basically all I figured out over the last 2 days of reading that you didn't have to do, which is that there are too many goal states. And you have to reduce the number of possible goal states. That's basically the name of the game in all plan recognition approaches. Okay? Number of goal states. And HTM planning reduces the number of goal states by saying, I gave you a bunch of HTM schemas, and the only things that are possible are allowed. Now, when we were in the beginning of the semester, we thought that was because that meant there is some search efficiency for that. But now I'll just say these are plan libraries, essentially. These are right plans that you could be doing. And these top level primitive actions correspond to saying which subsets of these, you know, state variable values do matter. Okay, now if you get rid of HTMs, then you're stuck because you don't know what your goal is. So instead, what he has are goal schemas which look like that. So in fact, you know, again, as I said, this area is new to me, so I might be completely wrong in what I'm telling you, but I think I'm not, at least right now. But basically, the question is, what are goal schemas doing? Goal schemas essentially do things like AC-ness, and they will say, this will be true if the following is true in the current state. Okay, so now what he does is, so look at his goal schemas here. And the schemas could be essentially the important thing about the reason it's a schema is it tends to be given in terms of variabilized objects, and you can make specific objects. So for example, one schema would be to say keep object O at location L. That is a goal schema. Okay? So any object O should be at location L. That might be a potential goal. So that's just a set of possible goals for different values of the object and different values of the location. Okay? So now given that, when in the initial state, I can say what goal schema goals are satisfied. These are all the ground goals that are satisfied, which are groundings of the goal schema. Okay? So presumably, well, since you are at DH, then, well, clearly you must have wanted D to be at H. That's one possible goal you might be having. The other possible goal you might be having is you wanted to keep C at H. Now you might ask, why didn't he say B at O? It turns out B is a different kind of an object. B is a briefcase. This particular problem is, this is a briefcase problem where you put two objects in a briefcase, carry it to your office. Or, you know, you want to, no, maybe it's slightly more interesting. The briefcase has, you know, a book that you want to leave at home, and you want to take your iPod to your office. So you have to open the briefcase, take the book out, put the iPod in, and then carry it to your office. Okay, it's a nice conditional planning problem. A conditional effect action problem. In that case, so he's basically, the disjunction that he's getting now is all possible goal schema instantiations that can be true at each state. Now, having said that, then the question, of course, is then I can say, well, based on this, I think you are really doing this and this. Based on this, I'm doing this and this. Based on this, you're doing this and this. Based on this, you're doing this, this, and this. Now, what he tries to do is find the goals that are most consistent with the actions that have been done. Okay? And the important thing is, suppose I would say, this is what your goal was, which is okay, except then why the heck did I do these actions? If my goal was already done, why was I doing these actions? So you come up with this idea of validity of a plan. A plan is valid if every action in the plan with respect to your goal, if every action in the plan is supporting the goal directly, or is supporting somebody who is supporting the goal. Okay? That's it. And yes, sir? What? No. Nothing. No. So your point is that he can get... No, you're not talking about optimal. Yes. What you're talking about, assuming non-minimal plans. Assuming minimal plans. Okay. But they don't particularly care. So what they would care about is they will look for goal sets that are fully consistent with all actions. If that doesn't exist, then, you know, consistent with all but one, all but two, and so on. But that's actually a very good point. If you it's less important to talk about optimality and more important to talk about essentially non-minimality. Okay, you could be doing things, but even when you have non-minimal plans, they may still have causal chaining. So for example, you know, I pick it up, put it down, 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 and then finally when I pick it up, I put it on my head. That's my goal. I would say everything I did is required, because the last pickup was required because I put it on my head, and the, you know, put down was required because I couldn't have picked it up if it wasn't on the ground, and so on and so forth. Okay, that's a whole entire can of worms as to how to minimize a plan. It turns out, just since we are at the end of the class anyway, I'll throw it at you that if I give you a plan and I say find the minimal plan, just a minimal set of actions in this plan, that would still be correct and will, you know, satisfy all the goals. That's just a happy NP-complete problem. Okay, just minimizing a plan is NP-complete because essentially you have to consider removing all sets of actions. Okay, so this goal graph based recognition goes this way, and this is one of the most recent approaches in 2000. And the big point that this guy makes is that there are no plan libraries. And if you understood anything I said, you know, you should say that even the top journals sometimes sleep, because essentially goal schemas are plan libraries. Okay, there, he has the same information that, you know, Couch has and HTN parsers have. And what's more, he's less expressive. What if, in fact, the way that particular paper works is that what if, in fact, your overall goal doesn't depend on any single state, but depends on what happened in multiple states. These can handle that. You can handle, I mean, those of you who are into HTNs know that you can have things like round trip, which are expressed in HTN, even if you don't have the notion of time. Round trip, if you don't have the notion of time, looks like not doing anything. So I was in Phoenix, I was back in Phoenix. So why not just kill the entire travel plan, right? But the idea is, even without time, HTNs can talk about a higher level task called round trip, which will parse this seemingly non-minimal plan. And so it is a correct plan, as far as I'm concerned. Okay, that's something that they can't do. So I will stop here, and most of what we'll do next class is look at the probabilistic methods for recognizing plans. And as I mentioned, I think when we're talking about MDPs, essentially if you're doing it, it's MDP. If you're watching other people do it, it is HMM and Markov chain. Okay, that's basically the idea. Except if you're doing it flat, it's MDP. If you're doing it at a hierarchical abstraction, it's hierarchical MDP. And if you are recognizing people's plans and of this HTN type, then you would be doing hierarchical Markov chains or hierarchical hidden Markov models. Okay, and we'll see that we can look at some very impressive demos in plan recognition, especially in this stuff what they call assistive technology, which I mentioned in the beginning of last class, where they try to help Alzheimer's patients by telling them, look, you know, you may want to get down here because you're passing your doctor's office by, okay? And that demo basically depends on the fact that one of the reasons plan recognition has actually become quite useful, more useful these days, is because you have a lot more sensing technology available. Okay, people can keep RFID tags, they can have GPS stuff on them and walk around. It raises a huge amount of privacy concerns, but that's the work in the other information assurance workshop. But as far as we are concerned, it's a bunch of opportunities. Now we get to see what these guys are doing. Okay? And Big Brother can be benign and tell you, don't do it. Okay? But one of the things that we, when we look at that very impressive work, one of the things that I want you to understand is they all wind up reducing the goal schemas, number of goals that you allow. Plan recognition is very hard if you basically allow any kinds of goals. Okay, the probabilistic plan recognition methods, in fact, if you read the survey paper, it points out that it has something bad to say about Cherniak and Goldman's paper, which is the first approach which converted plan recognition into Bayes network, basically maximal likelihood explanation. Okay, the point they make is those Bayes networks become too big. Okay, But the great point of the Goldman-Cherniak approach is they compute that Bayes network based essentially on just the plan library dynamically. Most of the work that gets done in the activity recognition these days is somebody selects a specific configuration for the HMM or the hierarchical HMM. So that will only be able to look at four of the goals. That's it. If you do those four things, we will tell you yes or no. If you do anything else, we don't care anything about it. Okay? But it's useful because between those four goals, since you're allowing low-level noisy observations, and you're still trying to disambiguate between which goals you might actually be pursuing among the four you could be doing, it's still quite useful. Okay? We'll stop here, and next class we'll talk about probabilistic plan recognition.